Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It's the Media Project. No, not with Rex Smith, not with Rosemary Armeo, and not with Ira Fussfeld. Hi, it's me, Alan, with Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, here with Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. Today we take a look back at some of the biggest stories and biggest mistakes of the year, and Alan, that's me, might even offer a few media predictions. One, what did we watch and what did we say in 2012? Has it been a good year for the press? Have there been enough stories? Let's go to you, Mike. What do you think?
Well, you know, our version in the establishment journalism and of what the top stories are and what the public wants to read about sometimes can differ. In fact, Google reported the term Whitney Houston was the most Googled term in 2012. So you can see that their priorities are different than ours. The biggest story, Hurricane Sandy. I think most people would agree on that.
Right, and we elected a president this year?
That's right, an election. Do you remember that? It was so long ago.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have this theory about gun control, which is that the NRA is, as you know, is fighting all efforts, state and national, to make major changes, sensible changes, like doing away with assault rifles and some of the other things that make so much sense to me so that fewer people are killed. Nevertheless, the idea is that people don't have a long memory. Newtown was a terrible, terrible tragedy, and there have been several since then. And yet, the idea is just let everybody chill out, and then they'll forget it, and this will, and they'll go away. What do you think?
You know, I disagree. I don't think people are going to forget Newtown.
Yeah, there's a lot of people saying that that might have been the tipping point, and people, you know, they should have been this way after Aurora, or should have been this way after previous, mass killings. Today, it seems like the tide has turned. People are ready to do something.
And you're seeing a flood of media coverage on gun control as well. And I don't think it's going to let up after the start of the year.
Yeah, a big story is going on right now in the lower Hudson Valley of New York State, where the Gannett newspaper that covers Westchester County, Rockland County, and Putnam County, which is all within about 20 minutes of Newtown, Connecticut, has published online a list of 44,000 individuals, their names and addresses, who have obtained, legally obtained, handgun permits. It doesn't mean they own a gun, but it does mean they've legally obtained a handgun permit. And that information is available under state law, under the Freedom of Information Law, and they've posted it, and they're taking a lot of heat for it.
It's quite a map, isn't it? I mean, you see little blue dots all over the place. Do you have a gun, Mike?
I don't. My name wouldn't be on that list if we did that story or if the Daily Gazette did that story for the Capital Region.
Right. My name wouldn't be on the list either, but I agree with you on that map with all those little dots was impressive. But what is bothering people down in the Hudson Valley is the fact that their name isn't available for the public. If you read the Associated story, though, you get a little bit of the context. You get the reporter talk to the people in the neighborhood, and neighbors of people who own guns say, you know, I think I would like to know whether my neighbor has a gun, whether when I send my child over there to to play, whether they know there's a gun. So maybe they could ask the people, do you have the gun locked up?
Tragically, there have been in the last 2 years in this region fatal accidents involving children playing with handguns in their parents' homes. So that is good information for a parent to know.
Yeah, and you never know when anger will explode, and then something bad, really bad, may happen when a gun is available. I was at the movies the other night, and a fight broke out about a lady in a lynx coat who had packed it, apparently, I can't guarantee this because I didn't smell it, but the people in the road did, with mothballs. So they asked the lady to move the coat. Now, here's the point. I know you're looking for that point. And there was a big fight. It really broke out. There weren't fisticuffs, but there were abusive words and things like that. That's the whole point. You know, you got a gun. Sometimes somebody takes it out. I once read a story when I was a younger man in New York where parking spaces are gold. Are you following me?
Oh, I know.
Parking spaces are gold. Where the worst thing you can do when somebody is waiting to back up into a space is to nosedive into that space. You still following me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, one day somebody did, and the guy in the front got out who was backing up and shot the guy. So there you go. Sometimes there are angry moments when if you don't have a gun, you just have your fists. It might do some damage, but it won't do the same kind of damage.
Sadly, if you have a weapon that's capable of delivering brutal force, people might use it if they lose their temper. And that's probably a good reason to have them under lock and key. And they did not have a gun. Well, it's a magazine under lock and key during the weekly Meet the Press show that was broadcast on NBC Sunday, where the host, David Gregory, was interviewing Wayne LaPierre, the head of the National Rifle Association, and he brought out a magazine, a clip that holds multiple bullets ready to be fired that would hook to a semi-automatic rifle. And now the Washington, D.C. police say they're looking into whether Gregory might have violated the law by having that in Washington, D.C. without a permit where you need one to have one. Do you think that they're overreacting, or do you think David Gregory should face the music?
Well, the question, of course, is who told? I mean, who brought the complaint to the who
it was
brought
on the national complaint TV. To the police? It could have been anybody.
No. Yes, but the real question is, was it a gun control person who said, "Ah, this is a good opportunity to make them all squirm"?
Well, yeah.
Judy, you were going to say?
You know, one of the things that I tell reporters is, don't break the law. And if it is a law that you're not supposed to have these things, if you're just going to show it off, I mean, they could have just shown a photograph. I don't know enough about this. Maybe there was a police officer in the background or off stage that was watching this magazine, but it seems like a bottom line thing, a simple thing. You're not supposed to break the law.
Yeah, I mean, reporters don't have any extra privilege. They are citizens that must abide by the law. So technically, David Gregory might be facing some kind of admonishment for a good cause, to bring up a very important issue and to dramatically present it on national television to fuel the debate. That's a very significant debate.
It didn't look that impressive, this little magazine. It looked almost like a cigarette case, if people remember cigarette cases. But I thought they could have done just as good a job of presenting what it looked like with a photograph.
And, you know, the NRA is really blaming the media for gun violence and trying to shrug off some of the responsibility. So perhaps David Gregory was fueling gun violence by bringing that on television. I don't know. The NRA, in their statements that were measured after the tragedy in Newtown, is contending that the real issue is media and violence in movies and video games, and perhaps it's copycats that see the attention that stories like Newtown get, and it fuels other people who are depraved to want to do something to get their moment of fame as they go out, so to speak. So do you think that the media contributes to gun violence when it publicizes stories like Newtown?
Well, it may well be that it does, but the competitive rationale is, look at what else is coming out of this. For example, the treatment of the mentally ill has been nothing short of disgraceful. And all of a sudden, people are calling for a revisit to the way in which we treat the mentally ill and the way in which we go about looking at guns. So yes, the fact of the matter is, there may be a copycatter out there. But in fact, it brings out a lot of stuff that needs to be dealt with. And so therefore, I think it's good. Now, look, we have the New York POST. I won't even mention the name. As you know, I don't like to do it. They're going to exploit this thing. They're going to put really crazy headlines. But people are really getting an awful lot of information, and people's minds are being changed. I think nobody wanted to touch this. In the election, President Obama was nowhere to be seen on this issue. Now, all of a sudden, President Obama sees the moment, just like Roosevelt did with World War II, and said, now's the time to move. Do I have any doubt he was always there? No. But, you know, there are competitive values in terms of running for president, and you have to decide whether or not this is worth it. Now it's worth it. The same thing with the governor. I don't question either of their motives. I think they're both doing the right thing, but they had to wait for that moment. And I think that, frankly, that the press has been a big part of that. What do you think, Judy?
You know, I think the press gets a bad rap for being anti-gun, and I don't think it is anti-gun. I think it explores the issue. We've written stories about the NRA's Eddie Eagle program, which promotes gun safety with kids. We have a hunting page every week where we have a columnist who talks about the different guns they use to shoot things and the advances in that technology. We write a lot of stories about people getting shot, but that's news. You can't deny when someone gets shot in the city of Schenectady, we're going to write about it. I mean, we're not going to hide it, and we're not going to exploit it, but we're going to put it in context. The people in the communities have a right to know when guns get fired and people get hurt.
Well, the media is not without error. And just as a segue, there's an interesting blog that's published on the Poynter Institute website by this guy, Craig Silverman, where he keeps track of the errors that the media makes. And, you know, reporting about gun violence is not one that he cites, but there have been some embarrassing errors this past year that he's tracked in the media. And that is getting information wrong, getting names wrong. And one of the biggest, of course, it's a mistake that's been made commonly, is when people are speaking about the President of the United States and the terrorist Osama bin Laden, they mix up the names. And even some newspapers this year, in 2012, have used Obama's name, the president's name, in headlines in reference to Osama bin Laden. And that's unconscionable, but it's happened. And he tracks that, and he tracks other errors that newspapers make. And it's a pretty interesting look. And one of the themes is that you are reporting stories before you get all the information. And I know you touched on that last week with Rex about the, and Judy, about the facts that came out about Newtown, and they turned out not to be facts. They were erroneous reports as the details unfolded. Well, that happens a lot in the news media. It happened with Gabby Giffords. Several major news agencies reported last January after the shootings in Arizona that Congresswoman Giffords had died in that hail of gunfire, along with others. The media does get it wrong sometimes. We're fallible, but we're trying our best, and we're not going after any particular person. When we make a mistake, it's a human error.
So Silverman's error of the year would be the reporting that the Supreme Court had struck down the individual mandate for health care, which happened on a lot of cable news stations shortly after that, proved wrong. They needed a little bit more information to put that in context.
Yeah, it turned out if they had read to the second page, they would have found that only one element of that Affordable Care Act had been declared unconstitutional, and the court essentially upheld Obamacare as being constitutional. But in the effort to try to get information out first in a very, very competitive atmosphere, and having it first means reputation, a lot of media can make mistakes, and a lot of reporters don't check their facts, and that's at the peril of, you know, of their own credibility. And we try to take a step back and try to verify things, but boy, it's a tough world out there when you have a lot of competition.
Yes, and it's even a tougher world, as you guys can attest, when, because newspapers have had such a tough time competing in the economic marketplace these days, even though more people are reading their stuff, they're reading it online, and the online advertising has not caught up with the advertising in the newspapers. And so you've had to fire people who are responsible for doing the fact-checking and doing the editing.
Yeah, that's the casualty. You know, newsrooms are a lot smaller than they were 5-10 years ago, and they don't have the staff to do all that. But it's not an excuse for poor journalism. The practices of fact-checking and double-checking your sources and getting more than just one source for a story haven't changed. It's just taking longer. And there's this now an appetite to put it online within a few minutes of when you find something out. So there's a big contradiction there. But speaking about the financial future for the print media, you know, we're looking forward to a very good 2013. We in the print media are optimistic that the economy, as it slowly heals and as things settle down, that advertising will return and newspapers will become multimedia companies that have a new model that will succeed. And I think everyone will benefit from that because, you know, we are the primary news gatherers in the local community.
No two ways about that. It's always been fascinating to me how many radio stations and others follow what the newspapers have been doing. Now, when you get a station like the one that we're speaking on here in the studio, WAMC, we have a lot of people out in the field. Not enough, but a lot. And that is something that almost doesn't exist in other places. The major commercial radio stations have been firing and swatting like flies. And so I think that the point of this all is that the dependency on the newspapers is going to be even greater to do this work. But Mike and Judy, what I'm interested in, what, in terms of what you just said about looking forward to a great year, is whether or not people will start paying the appropriate price for advertising online, or whether you think they're just going to come back to the sort of touchy-feely holding the newspaper in your hand and saying, this is something I can send to my mother for advertising. What do you make of that?
You know, I think the shift online is undeniable. People of all ages are starting to read their news online. The print product is going to be around for a while, certainly. But I think advertisers, too, are seeing that they're getting eyeballs on news websites, and there is value there. Sure, they're developing their own online presence, and that's a competitor for newspapers' advertising dollars as well. But I think as more newspapers develop this paywall and people start to get used to paying for their product, this is good news ahead. It's slowly building.
And that's an interesting way to talk about it, because at the Daily Gazette, there is a paywall. At the Times Union, there currently is not a paywall. But I think the trend, if you look around, is that people who want to get their news from the local newspaper website are going to have to participate in some of that by honing up some money or subscribing to a print edition in order to get the online edition. That is the trend, and that may be the turning point that will return revenue to the source of the news, that is the local newspaper.
There's a Kentucky sheriff, Mike, who has now said that media organizations should be compelled to say who their sources are. You know, we have one famous columnist in our region who writes for one of the tabloids who says, I have sources and they're good ones. Well, it's not good enough for me. And there are some people who think when that kind of thing happens, not specifically with this guy, although certainly with him, that people are making up the sources, that there are no sources. How do you get around that?
In the Kentucky case, the sheriff was asking for the idea of someone who had sent a letter to the newspaper making allegations about something that was happening in a school. It's different because that newspaper did not promise confidentiality to that source. So the dynamics there are different. But in terms of, and generally, when you use an unnamed source, the editors need to know who the source is. They need to know that the source is in a position to know, and they need to know the motives for why the source wants to be anonymous. Reputable newspapers, we're pretty careful about using unidentified sources. We don't want to do them. Obviously, in any story, the most credible information comes from somebody who puts their name to it.
Yeah, the credibility is on the line. If a newspaper or any media organization is quoting unnamed sources and they're getting information correct time after time, they're going to have credibility and people are going to believe them. But if they're just going with rumors and attributing it to unnamed sources, that's irresponsible. It will come back to haunt them, I am positive.
What do you guys think about the Baltimore Sun, which ran a full-page cartoon on its front page for the first time? Are we crossing the Rubicon here?
Yeah, it was an interesting way. I think it was an end-of-the-year wrap-up that we're using this cartoon to do that, which is an interesting thing. We're all working on, you know, wrapping up the end of the year by rehashing some of the stories we've covered. So it's a different way. Editorial cartoonists can offer their own little view of the world. It's an editorial view. It's one with an opinion. But it's always something that the readers like to see. I've tried to see this online and I was unable to. It's something I definitely would like to see. It's something different.
They say a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Yeah, whatever works, right? And as we go forward in the new year, it's going to be harder work than ever for you, Judy, and for you, Mike. And there's going to be a tough road because fewer bodies, more work, and people hold you to a standard which continues to be the highest for our newspapers, particularly our local newspapers. So good luck to both of you.
Yeah, well, thanks. You know, newspapers do hold a very important place in our local communities, and we have a franchise, and it's something we don't take lightly, and we need to maintain that and support that. And, you know, we'll be giving up a lot if we don't do just what you said, work hard and keep it intact.
You know, but running a newspaper is a little bit like starting up a well-oiled machine every day. The system has all these protections in place. There are traditions that you have editors saying, check that source. You have reporters going out to the scenes and getting important information. So even though we have fewer people around, the system helps us get the paper out every night. And that's one of the things we say in the newspaper, the paper paper will get out. The stories will be as accurate as we can make them. Almost like the radio station, you're always on unless you have a power failure.
And then you're online.
And today, thanks to the magic of our super engineering staff, I'm actually talking to you from home and sounding like I'm in the studio, right?
You do. You sound like you're right across from us. It's like a virtual Alan.
But I'm missing the angry looks you usually give me and that eye rolling.
But Judy, I've always been like Ferdinand the Bull, the story. I always try to be the picador, to try to get you to erupt in a great moment of anger, and I've never been able to do it.
Yeah, you can get me going if you talk about not letting the public have access to information, or someone who won't call a reporter back after, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of trying. If you withholding information from the public is something that really sets me off. So if that's your tip for the new year.
So with that in mind, it was the Media Project. It was not with Rex Smith. It was not with Rosemary Armeo, and it was not with Ira Fussell, but it was with two super people, Gazette editor Judy Patrick and Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Albany Times Union, or of the Times Union. And David Gustina, of course, was our wonderful producer. So good luck to all of you, and Happy New Year to everybody, and we'll be back with all of these wonderful characters and more in the new year.
Happy New Year.
They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk, hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
Alan Shartok is a political scientist and professor emeritus in the Department of Communication at the University at Albany. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Lydia Kulbita is an anchor at WNYT News Channel 13. David Gustina is producer of the Media Project, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, which is solely responsible for its content.
Yes, I've met Capone and Hoover and lots of other fakes. I've even met a genius who swallows rattlesnakes. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess.
Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.
Hi there, this is David Gustina, producer of The Media Project, here to remind you that if you're a regular listener or if it's the first time you've ever heard the show, you can always go to our website at wamc.org, listen to us live online, or you can podcast The Media Project anytime. That's wamc.org. Thanks for listening.